Live and local on AM 770 KTTH. Your independent conservative host, Todd Herman, welcomes you to The Todd Herman Show.
Today is the day the Lord has made, and I am thankful and glad within it. And these are the times in which God has decided we will live, and I'm increasingly thankful that we have the opportunity to, in my case, or many cases, a lot of people, try our very best to apply our faith, and also that we have a chance perhaps to avoid or avert the catastrophe into which the United States appears to be headed. And that catastrophe is the China model, which it is, to me, it's clear as, it's as clear as the wall I'm looking at. Actually, I'm looking out a window. It's as clear as the sunshine through which I see the backyard, is that we're headed towards the China model. And the China model is people are monitored at every turn, that there are social credit scores. Remember when we talked about that in China, and this is like 3 years ago? I can remember 3 years ago that liberal people in news media were aghast at the social credit score. Oh, I can't believe this. This is really where China goes overboard. So as social credit scores are installed in the United States, you would think they'd have a similar response, but they don't, because it's being installed in a really brilliant way. Like the ESG scores that they're, or rankings they're putting on businesses, they being the International Monetary Fund and the World Economic Forum. And, oh, well, they're just think tanks. Right. Exactly. They're just think tanks. That's all they are. Right. Because rich people, incredibly rich, oligarch level rich, billionaires never get together to attempt to change society in ways they would like without using the voting systems. Never has that happened. Right. Which is not happening now, certainly. This is a social credit score for businesses, which will turn into a social credit score for the employees at those businesses. How? Because if your business ain't woke, well, without access to capital, maybe it goes broke. Part and parcel of this is the soft bigotry of low expectations. It is. That there's only one way to be socially conscious, according to the ESG score being pushed down upon businesses. And the way the ESG score works is this. It's no longer the income to earnings ratio and the stock, you know, all the ratios that the stock buyers use. It's no longer scoring your company on its long-term viability in terms of income and assets and number of competitors and reliance upon, you know, key vendors or key contracts. That's not it anymore. They're literally saying in the ESG scores, nice business you have there. Be a shame if it got boycotted. E, environment. S, social. G, governance. So the big providers of capital are saying, we're inventing a brand new credit score. If you're not woke, you might get boycotted. Therefore, you're a financial risk. If you're not woke, you might get sued. Therefore, you're a financial risk. And if you're not after governance that puts all the control in our hands, well, then you're a risk. The S part of that, the social part of that, there's one view in the uniculture typified by the party. And the one view is this, that black people simply can't be expected to take care of themselves. It's utter racism. It's filth. It's sick, but it's peddled as caring. Case in Minnesota in Brooklyn Center is being reported by Twitter as a black man, capital letter B, because, of course, black is a race. A black man, it's not, incidentally. It's a color. White is a color. A black man was shot by a cop. Does the blackness matter? Well, of course it does, because there's only one view. That is that every time a black individual is shot by a cop, it's racism. That's the view of the party. It's certainly a tragedy. The loss of a young life that could be turned around. And in the case of this young man who was shot, I'm comfortable saying his life was in need of being turned around. Anytime that occurs, it's a tragedy because of the promise inherent in continuing to live and evolve and change and grow and mature. Capabilities inherent in all human life. But look at the West Coast as once again the object lesson to the world. We had government officials in a meeting explain that being on time is racism. That showing up on time to a government meeting is racism. That seeking and obtaining good grades is racism. What you will see when you just scratch the surface of CRT, critical race theory, is you'll see two things. One, it's racism. Two, it's a war on standards. I'm going to wait and see if the Mockingbird media will report some of the apparent facts about this young man who was shot by the police. What I've seen is A, very sad. B, very disturbing. And C, indicates to me someone who was aching to have an incident like this where he got to run from the cops. Does it make it less sad or tragic that a young person was shot? If the cop did the wrong thing, I want the cop to go through the judicial process. I want him to face a jury of his peers. If the cop did the wrong thing, I'm happy to call that out, as I have many, many times on this program. Cops are government employees, and government is something that should be held to account. That's one of the things that makes us a conservative, or makes me a conservative, or us. Small government, big people. Cops are government employees. They should be held to account. Well, you can't expect black people to... That's the racism of the soft bigotry of low expectations. But it's now worse than the soft bigotry of low expectations. People with megaphones who have expressed the notion that if you're black and pulled over by a cop, your life is inherently at risk. I've talked to people who feel this way. After George Floyd's death, we had a number of black people on the show who had that fear. Young man is an assistant pastor in Federal Way, and he talked about this fear he had. It was an incredible discussion, because he was quite honest. He said, yeah, I do fear. I fear for my kids. You know what he did? He talked to people. He went to the local police in Federal Way, and he said, hey, I'm afraid. And the police said, well, we don't want you to be afraid. And he got together with one of the police chiefs. And they spoke about things. Man to man and father to father. It didn't take the entire fear away. And it helped significantly. Our friend, the pastor, is a thinking man who grew up in the South. Feels like he faced a lot of racism, and he's a pastor, and he leads his congregations in worship, and he teaches the youth. Well, we can't expect him to show up on time for church. It's a racist construct. Funny thing, he was on time for our interview. And he's a successful man. my friend Dres, we've had on the program. Dres is the only person I've ever met who gave me a solid definition of whiteness. It was heartbreaking. As a young man, Dres growing up would go to bed. He was praying. His family were solid Christians. He would pray to a God that he was taught to think of as white. And I said, wow, Dres. Okay, I can see that. That's heartbreaking because I don't think God has a color. And Dres is a successful man. Dres is a very successful man. More importantly to me, he's a brilliant family man. And Dres is never late for our meetings. Because Dres is a man. The soft bigotry of low expectations has gone beyond that. And I will make a case that it might be that this young man in Minnesota is a victim of something worse than the soft bigotry of low expectations. Let me explain what I mean after we do a quick glance at traffic, the right-way traffic.
The wrecked northbound 5 in the south end, its leader Kenny is gone. I think they've made real progress on this wreck in Bellevue on southbound 405 just past I-90. I'm hardly seeing any slowing in either direction here, but I am seeing an awful lot of it in the Alderwood area. We've had two problems, one northbound 5 right at 405 blocking two left lanes, another one at 44th on southbound 5 blocking that HOV and the left general purpose. This report sponsored by Molina Healthcare. AM 770 KTTH traffic.
So the shooting in Brooklyn Center, this young man, and the soft bigotry of low expectations, this is a way that I'm doing it. Soft bigotry of low expectations is what I've explained. Well, come on, you can't expect black people to be on time. That's a racist construct. And well, come on, I mean, you can't expect black people to not commit crimes. I mean, that's a racist construct. This is the racism of the left. You can't expect black students to follow the rules at school. So if we see more black youth are being disciplined, perhaps there's racist teacher. Great. Find the racist teacher. Fire the racist teacher. No racist teachers, but a lot of black people who are breaking the rules. Well, you can't expect them to follow the rules. That's the racism of the left. That's the racism of critical race theory. That's the racism of the soft bigotry of low expectations. But there's another now expectation. And that is that you run from the cops. If I believed that my daughter's life was at risk anytime she was pulled over by the police, it would not just change how I think, it would change the structure of my brain. And follow me on this, please. Our brains have the capacity to change their structure. It's called neuroplasticity. People who, for instance, have faced long-term sexual abuse, you can see in their brains where the portions of their brains have gotten larger and smaller than would be the baseline norm. You can often see PTSD in the brains of people. Likewise, people who've been depressed for a long time and isolated for a long time, their brain structure changes. It's neuroplasticity. Our brain can do some amazing things with neuroplasticity. Neuroplasticity can, in fact, allow people who've had traumatic injuries, say traumatic brain injuries or very traumatic strokes, their brains can actually remap. Oh, okay, so this neural pathway is broken. With enough training and enough therapy, we can find other neural pathways. It's a remarkable, remarkable design. The way our brains are designed. It's remarkable. And that design can also have its problems. When young people are taught that you live in a kill or be killed circumstance, their brains take on the attributes of people living in that world. That becomes a reality. Now, there are neighborhoods where it's kill or be killed. I work with people who lived kill or be killed lives. and are trying to come out of that. And one of the things that I try to do with them is to help them change their brain structure. I'm not a surgeon or a psychiatrist, but the brain structure can be changed by doing things like, let's get up on time. Let's get out of bed. Let's get a bank account. Let's not just spend our money immediately when we get it from our paychecks. Let's start helping people. Even if it's like you used to pay 10% up to your crew, let's pay 10% to you and 10% to a local, you know, nonprofit you agree with. Trying to change the structure of the brain from kill or be killed to something now more approximating thriving. As we wait for the evidence to unfold in this case of this young man who was allegedly shot by cops during a traffic stop, his family said over air fresheners. Apparently, there's a video. There was a passenger who took a video. Hopefully, we'll be availed of all that. Young black people are being taught by MSNBC, by Jay Inslee, by CNN, that whenever they encounter a cop, they're in a life-threatening circumstance. Young black people are being taught that the system is so racist, it has to be scrapped. It has to be torn down. They're being taught this on a daily basis. You live in such a racist country that it's not even just the people that are racist. It's the systems. And if you parse that even for 5 seconds, it doesn't make sense. Systems don't work without people. And the majority of people are not racist people. And the vast majority of cops loathe the idea of having to take a life, particularly a young life, particularly a young, innocent life. But the brains of young black people are also neuroplastic. Their brains are our brains. We have a beautiful design. Sometimes survival dictates that our brains change and adapt. And in a case of constant combat or constant vigilance, it can change the way you respond in normal circumstances. You've been around someone with PTSD? If it was combat-induced, you ever been around them when a loud sound occurs? Their brain has changed. Loud sounds are a threat to my life. Likewise, with young people taught that a siren behind you is a threat to your life. Likewise, in a different manner. I had a teacher who warned us. He'd been a linebacker for the Chicago Bears. Very tough man. He was older, but he was still really tough. He warned us. I have PTSD. I was in Vietnam. I'm a combat veteran. Please never approach me from behind. If you do that, tell me up front, Mr. Cub. I shouldn't say his name. Walt. I'm coming. Warned us. One day a kid decided to test the theory, and there was this teacher, this science teacher and football coach, with his back turned to the group, and this idiot kid, my age, we were all idiots, went up behind this teacher and he smacked a big science book on the floor. And this teacher turned around and in a split second had his hand around this kid's throat, lifting him off the ground and was ready to smash his face. And this teacher stopped and said, I'm sorry. And he said, you need to report what I just did. That man's brain had been changed. And he warned us. A whole generation of kids' brains have been changed. Any cop is a killer. It's beyond the soft bigotry of low expectations now. Entire generations of people traumatized. And now we're extending it with masks and lockdowns. And that'll incur brain changes too. Already is. We'll talk about that more extensively tomorrow. This piece in the New York Times there, Ann. It's an incredible piece. But there's something missing from it. That is the phrase lockdown. We'll come back with your text messages on the Todd Herman Show.
It's your turn to text the Todd Herman Show.
The rule's pretty simple.
Be concise, be precise, and drop the mic. 800-465-8770.
And give yourself a nickname. First time that you text in, that's helpful. So we feel like we're speaking with human beings. I think a lot, this speaks for a lot of people today. Nick, who's filling in, producing, and board opping, very complicated. 1 hour of sleep in the young man's body. Constitution RN speaks for a lot of listeners to the show. Nick is doing amazing. He has, and you have. And thank you, Nick.
Thank you, Todd. That means a lot.
Good. And now to the text on the content of the program. From the 905, hey, that's, give yourself a nickname. In fact, or we'll choose one for you. I prefer you to. Great show from a listener in Southern Ontario, Canada. Listen regularly. Just so you know, when I text Todd for the notes, I'm still getting a repeat from 4-8-2021 glitch, I assume, would like the current notes. Yeah, that's something that we're going to have to take care of. And it is because Alex is sick and Tarek, who knows how to do this, is not in. I promise we'll double down on the notes. When we get that figured out. So you will get the notes to today's show. And so don't do it now because it's not there. But hopefully by tomorrow we'll have this addressed. Just know this. If you ever want to see the links we're talking about, and tomorrow, no, it's Wednesday, I'm going to have some visual aids where you actually need these. Text Todd, T-O-D-D, to 800-465-8770. And Ontario, it's the province in Canada to which I've not been. But would love to go. So thank you for that. Appreciate you listening. From the 360, another one. Please give yourself a nickname. Just do it one time. You never need to do it again or to go into our database. Todd, we've got to talk. I have so much to share and ask. I'm probably the only Christian conservative teacher in my very liberal district, the most left district in the state. And I'm completely alone except for you in the morning. I hope we can meet sometime. I'll buy dinner. Paul, forever and always unvaccinated. I appreciate that. Oh, speaking of that, Paul, the Seattle Times, which is the preeminent mockingbird media outfit on the left coast when it comes to the COVID flu, the publisher of the Times, Frank Blethyn, is quoted in a Post Alley interview where he brags about saving journalism by accepting monies from groups like the Gates Foundation. Now, in the case of the Times, the way this was described several years ago in the Post Alley interview, they accept these monies in laundered form. So the Gates Foundation gives it to a third party group. That third party group bequeaths it to newspapers so that they focus on certain areas of content. Now, it happens that the Columbia Journalism Review has written about the Seattle Times and their coverage of the COVID flu and Bill Gates purchasing positive coverage from the press and purchasing coverage to scare people about the COVID flu. That's the Columbia Journalism Review. And Dr. Naomi Wolf, a former advisor to Bill Clinton, a leftist, Dr. Naomi Wolf, contends that the coverage around the COVID flu is being driven by dollars like that. And I can continue on. But Paul, to your point about being a teacher, the Seattle Times mockingbird media members that they are in relation to the COVID flu, they're trying to scare everybody. Now they have an article running that colleges in Washington State are struggling with how to get back to normal. And they're wondering, how far should they go in encouraging students to get shot up with the mRNA gene therapies, including requiring them? Articles like that exist for one reason. The people involved, the people pushing these ideas, want to float the idea of maybe we'll force kids to take these mRNA injections of untested experimental gene therapies. That's why they exist. College-age kids, our friend Dr. Andrew Boston, one of the dissidents with whom we speak, he tracked the, 500,000 cases of the COVID flu in college-age students and came out with maybe 9 deaths. And in each of those, save maybe one, the COVID flu was a contributor, but not the cause. The real numbers are these. College-age kids have a greater chance of dying playing a game of football than they do of the COVID flu. They're also not particularly good at passing it on. So, Paul, you're a conservative teacher in the most liberal district, which I will guess is probably Seattle. And you're writing to me. And I appreciate that. And I do hope we get to meet one day and have a discussion. But I will tell you this. You're not the only one, my brother. I get notes from teachers these days, guys. I have a note in my email box this morning from a teacher. I've got another one from Friday about critical race theory saying we've got to do something. Todd, you've got to do something. Todd, you need to stand up. And Todd, you need to talk about this. And this is in Boise, Idaho. We're seeing this. And I've got another one saying, how did this make it up to Port Angeles? And Todd, you have to, I talk about it all the time, but you guys are the ones who are going to have to say, I will not teach this. I understand it could lead to the loss of your job, but it could also lead to the loss of your country. It's also mental abuse of children to teach them they live in such a poison world. So I do appreciate it, Paul. Thanks for the note. Back to text messages, 800-465-8770. Sarah and Yelm. Good day, Sarah. Have any, quote, experts run a COVID-19 model whereby all people below a certain age, say 60, were allowed to live normally after a certain date, say June 1, 2020, focused on those specific ages and medical issues? Well, first of all, Sarah, I want to point out to something that snuck into your language. We're allowed to live normally. See, one of the things that we're suffering from is buying the illusion of control. The illusion of control is this. If everybody just took off their woke masks, there'd be nothing they could do. I mean, I guess they could get crazy and get military, and they're not going to. If everybody just took them off and said, no, not doing it. Well, then they couldn't do it. And to answer your question, did they model that? You know what's funny? Funny in the way of being horrific. You know the discredited, laughable IHME at the University of Washington, which receives a whole bunch of its money from the Bill Gates Foundation? Bill and Melinda Gates. Pardon me, Melinda. I didn't mean to shortchange you on your tyranny. They never modeled a non-lockdown model. So when South Dakota and other states said, yeah, actually, we're done with the medically useless, deadly, politically advantageous to the left or to the party lockdowns, the partial lockdowns of school children and churches and small businesses, but not big businesses and not abortion clinics and not marijuana dispensaries and not alcohol dispensaries and not abortionists. They didn't have a model for that. So you had the IHME say about South Dakota, well, our model shows 14,000 people will die. And then it was, well, no, it's more like 11,000. And then, oh, wait, no, it's going to be 7,000. Apparently, it eventually got down to 700 people, and they were still wrong. Models based upon what they want is what they publish. I'll give you another example. You remember Sturgis? The super spreader event. Public health officials are warning the Sturgis Harley-Davidson motorcycle event could amount to a super spreader. They warned they could see cases increase by up to 30%. And then they ran that article later. Yep, it was a super spreader. Look at this. There's the cases. You know what they did, right? Do you know what they did? They quadrupled the PCR tests during and immediately after Sturgis. What do we know about PCR tests? They're fiction. You run a PCR test above 35 cycles, it's fiction. They can't tell the difference between you had a cold once a couple years ago, or you had the flu once, or you have the flu, or you have the COVID flu. That's how they pulled that off. We'll come back on the Todd Herman Show.
Down on Main Street. Down on Main Street.
On a personal note today, it's one of the weeks and weekends where I get these emails on a fairly regular basis that people ask me, and young people, generally young people, although there's people who are restarting careers, they'll ask me things like, well, what's the secret to getting into politics? Or what's the, you know, I want to work in politics, so what's the secret? And I want to get into radio, so what's the secret? And I'm so far behind in emails. And I really apologize. And I just have to, I've got to take a day off and just communicate with people and respond to emails. I read them. Please know that. I do. And I know it makes me a bad human that I can't instantly respond. I am blessed with a lot of messages. So I want to do a group response, please. People have written me and said, how do I get into politics? How do I get into radio? How do I get into do a startup business? Right. Well, first of all, what I did doesn't need to be what you did, but I will share some facts with you. Okay. You need to be willing to live today like no one will, no one else will, so you can do tomorrow what no one else can. Now, that's easy to say, and it's hard to do. Okay. One of my favorite, I promise I won't make this a CrossFit rant. And I'll bring an author into this circumstance, too. Well, let me start with the author. William Gibson is one of my favorite authors. And he has written the book that I consider to be utter genius called Pattern Recognition. And he's very famous for having invented the he's credited with inventing cyberpunk and a whole bunch of things in sort of the pseudo science fiction sphere of writing. William Gibson, his favorite book of mine is Pattern Recognition, which I think is absolutely stunning. It's part thriller, part sci-fi, part philosophy. William Gibson was once asked, how do I become a writer? I have these stories I need to tell. So how do I do it? And he said something very similar to what I tell other people. Is he said, when I grew up, I didn't have a TV and I never wanted one. I didn't engage in sports and I didn't want to. To this day, I don't have a TV. So where other people would sit down to watch or consume media, I sit down to create it. I have books. I read. I'll watch an occasional movie. But really what I do is I write, and I need to write. Now, Gibson is an extreme example of someone pursuing something by doing today what no one else will. And so now in this era, he can do what no one else can. And that Gibson has made so much money from his books. He need not work. And what he does, it can be on whatever he chooses to work. Whatever he decides to write, he can write. Now, one note of caution here. It's really not unusual for brilliant people to be brilliant at work and fail at life. People become obsessive. So the work, that's the pursuit, and forget giving to others, or forget things like church and family. And it's axiomatic that some people rise to such levels of success because they just kiss everything else off. One of my favorite athletes in CrossFit once said, I've asked all the time, Cammy, how do I do it? Like, how do I become a CrossFit champion? What do I need to do? Her name is Camille Bazinet, but people who know her call her Cammy. And Cammy said, for many years, I didn't want to give away my secret. And then I realized it doesn't matter. People aren't going to do it. And so she'll openly say, here's the recipe. I eat only these foods at these times, only foods that fuel my body. I work out 4 to 5 times a day. I concentrate on skill development and find my weaknesses, and I attack my weaknesses. So I spend more time on things I hate than things I like. So she became at least 1 year a CrossFit champion. Other champions have followed in that mold. Matt Frazier was a 5-time CrossFit champion. He recently retired from competition, and he has undertaken the role of washing dishes in his home because his fiance Sammy had been doing that. And now Matt's responsible for cooking because Sammy had, in fact, before competitions, wouldn't let him have steak knives unless he cut his finger and be limited in his competition. And so now Matt is responsible for these things. He's reengaged in life. Fortunately, things like radio and politics doesn't mean you have to give up your life. In fact, you shouldn't ever. Right? Succeed first at life. But to answer the question, being in politics means you get done with this segment of the program. You pick up a phone or you go online. You find the politician in whom you believe, or the organization in which you believe. And you say, I will call them and email them until I get a meeting to be a volunteer. If that's how it has to start, that's what I will do. And then when you become a volunteer, you make yourself indispensable. If it's radio, you do it now. I mean it. Learn how to produce. Learn how to process audio. Learn to podcast. Even if you don't want to be a host, do that. Apply for every single job that appears in radio. Ask for any and all informational meetings that you can. And if you ever get an opportunity to work overnight, like Nick has done tonight, make yourself indispensable. So that they say, I know someone who'll do this. It's this guy or it's this girl. I know a person who'll step in at the last moment. They always do. A lot of people will not do these things. And the people who do can end up having a career that most people won't. This is the Todd Herman Show. We are every weekday, 6 a.m. to 9 a.m. on podcasts everywhere. Now go be well, be strong, and be kind.